Because I'm the kind of person that doesn't make promises that I know that I have trouble keeping, not because of me, but because of the circumstances of life. It's like a lot of politicians in terms of campaign promises. My thing is, if you are not able to keep that promise, it better be rational reasoning behind that. And if you know that you have the kind of legislature that at the moment or even in the future cannot help you deliver such promises on your word, then you should not make those promises in the first place. That wisdom just came to me just now. So when I think about what I've been called to do in life, often I find myself changing. You're going to hear me change every day for the better in episodes because I'm healing. And I'll say this. I decided to be the kind of servant leader and public service servant where I have safe ways of being other people for the people, to the people, with the people, by the people. What that means is I don't want to spend too much time in hoity-toity environments, but I also want to be in downtrodden communities in ways that I'm not unnecessarily endangered. Because you have some people who they're in communities that are questionable in terms of high crime, but they don't have the right people to help protect them. Like, yes, you can do servant leadership in forgotten about, shunned communities, but at the same time, we have to have discernment. Okay? We have to keep in mind that there's a way you can give back without arousing jealousy and envy. What I mean is this. You have to split your time in the communities that you're called to. Understand that you have to really be studious of people. That way, that community can help you to still help out, but they'll protect you from the questionable element in terms of certain people in that community. It's like, hey, you can't be around so-and-so because you... I'll give you an example. You can't be around Antonio because you're not able to come to him correct. You're going to be around him. You can't have that in your heart. If you're going to keep having that in your heart, we're not going to let you be close to him. And we will legally go at you if we find out you're close to him. So I'm wise with that. I'm like, okay. I understand that as a global social justice warrior, I will not always be praised, and I don't seek that. You're going to have some people who feel what they feel. And some of their feelings about, some people's feelings about me, there'll be unfavorability. And I'm okay with that because I know that there's a diversity of viewpoints regarding us all. And that's a life reality. And I'm not deterred by that. I'm unbothered by it. It doesn't bother me. So I recognize that I have to go in communities where I'm well protected. I can't just be out and about. I gotta make sure I don't have open season on me unnecessarily. And then when I think about what I'm called to do, I can admit that I decided to have the kind of media platforms. You know, sometimes people may make statements about the podcast, some favorable, some unfavorable. And I decided to be the kind of media mogul, so to speak. If I say anything that can be easily misconstrued as bigoted or discriminatory, I'll just delete all those kinds of episodes permanently. I have no problem with starting from scratch, meaning, okay, I have to not do those kind of episodes ever again. I'll just do episodes that are fully inclusive and fully hospitable, if it ever came to that point, because some people look back and go, hey, Antonio, you might want to get rid of that because this is how it's making women feel, or you might want to get rid of this, how I'm making black people feel, you want to get rid of that because I'm making immigrants feel, you want to get rid of that because this is how it makes LGBTQI plus people feel. So I don't mind having those kind of listeners that go, I get what you're coming from, but those episodes gotta go. We know you mean well, but we want to make sure you fully stay in line with the human rights world. So I don't mind trashing some episodes. I don't mind that. I don't mind apologizing when I need to. I don't mind expressing genuine remorse and genuine regret when I need to. I don't mind atoning for errors I committed. And I don't mind turning from the ways of toxicity and never turning to toxicity ways again. To be easy on myself, I'm saying as my media platform here, Tonio Time Daily, our media platform, Tonio Time Daily, grows, I may have to get rid of some episodes. I may have to trim it down or take it all out in terms of certain episodes. So I'm okay with that. Some episodes for some people could be too vulgar, or, you know, it could easily run afoul with the FCC in some kind of way. I'll just get rid of them. I'm like, if it's going to cause all those problems, I'll get rid of them. Don't get me wrong, people appreciate the truths I share, but if it's that kind of issue of, I don't want to be banned from people that are the least of these in our society. If it ever got that bad, I'd be like, I just won't ever do those type of episodes again. I won't say that in private ever again. I'll never say that in public ever again. Ooh, this is not worth it. That's just how I feel. But let me get back to what I'm saying. So I also recognize, you're wondering, how will I deal with hecklers, detractors, haters, naysayers, trolls? This is how I deal with them. I won't let them ruin my life. I won't let them ruin my self-esteem. I don't have a clapback mentality towards them, because that is how they become God over me, by simply responding. So what I do is I say, well, I look at the attacks as forms of positive affirmation. If I'm attacked by those who want to come against me, that must mean that I'm on the right track, on the right path. So I take insults as compliments. I'm not talking about degrading myself. I'm not talking about kissing up or sucking up to anybody. What I'm saying is the fact that they had to take that amount of time and energy and presence just to get at me, that must mean that I'm moving in the correct direction. That must mean that I'm truly prospering on the inside. That means that I'm truly being prepared to bless more, to be more miraculous, to do more signs, to do more signs and wonders, and to do more breakthroughs. That's how I look at it. So the way, because I look at it that way, I understand that those that purposely misunderstand me, I allow them to rob themselves of the ability to know me, to comprehend me, to appreciate me, to be awe-inspired by me. I allow them to purposely misconstrue me, because I also allow them to be robbed of the ability to be of oneness with me, to be of wholeness, wholesomeness with me. I allow them to be robbed of spiritual intimacy, intellectual intimacy, emotional intimacy, and cognitive, psychological intimacy with me. So that's what happens with them. I pay them no attention. I usually don't talk to them because they don't want a constructive conversation. They want destructive banter. And I go, no. That's why I don't talk to them. I just stay focused on what I need to be doing. If anybody wants to respond, that's on them. I just choose not to. I choose to focus on constructive criticism from people who mean me well. That's the only kind of criticism I embrace in life. So that's how I deal with that. And I've said it before, but I gave new details. You know, I recognize that when you're fighting for egalitarianism, the lives of everyone in this life, there's going to be some people that are not going to like it. And for me, I just do not allow it to cause me any problems, because that wouldn't make sense to let that happen anyway. So these are all the rest of my callings. I appreciate you as my listener so much. I am very much called to the secular community, unbelievers and non-believers. I have a heart for the religiously unaffiliated, the ones that say nuns in terms of religion, N-O-N-E. I do have a heart for singles. I have a heart for those that are child-free. have a heart for those who are disillusioned and disenchanted by politics. I'm called to autism needy. That's a no-brainer. Because what autism mom said to me about that being a part of why I'm here on earth, which is the truth. I'm called to the world of religious television networks. What that means is that there are people in that world that are believing that God has inspired them to be of the mentality of how to show compassionate love, sacrificial love, unconditional love, agape love, selfless love to people like myself from Jesus's perspective. So sometimes I'll be on religious television network programs and shows to give perspectives that are normally not told on those networks. Those perspectives are, how do we show Christ-likeness to those who are Black, autistic, abused, and those whose gender and sexual expressions are outside of cisgender heterosexuality, and how do we protect kids and adults from organized crime? So that will be important. I think I'm called to the world of secular entities, you know, like those that are not, you know, those that cater to non-believers, unbelievers. I think non-believers, unbelievers will feel like, okay, from a standpoint of this is how non-believers and unbelievers think. I'm not attacking believers and deists when I say this. Non-believers and unbelievers, this is, they'll think, well, from a scientific perspective, from a philosophical perspective, from a mathematical perspective, from a historical perspective, from a geographical perspective, from a evidence perspective, from a perspective of humans to other humans. How can we show love to those who are Black, autistic, sexually, genderly fluid, those who are survivors of organized crime? So I'm called to that world too. I think for me, when I look at my own life, and this is what I've learned from myself, I really had to learn that when people are not careful, it is possible to forsake one's calling. And I avoid that by having that calling in my head and my heart memorized on a daily basis. I'm basically called to teach each and every kind of life skill that exists. I feel called to the world of the law in terms of being a part of the legal teams of those who've been wrongfully targeted, wrongfully convicted, wrongfully accused, as well as those who are survivors of child abuse and adult abuse. That means that even though I'm not a criminal, I have to show up to courtrooms and I have to be at trials because who I am, what happened in my childhood, and my mesmerizing comprehension of the law will cause many people to say, hey, Antonio has wisdom on the law that's usually not vocalized. We need to have him to properly help us navigate how to stand up and take a knee for those who are facing unjust treatment, UNJUST, from bigots, as an example. I definitely feel called to marriages, romance, unmarried, romantic relationships, and a fair recovery. Even if I wasn't a side piece married woman, I still would have the same call to a fair recovery. Nothing about my life changes my callings. I would have the same callings no matter what happened to me. That's just how I'm wired. So I feel called to a fair recovery. I feel called to those who are divorced because there are high rates of divorce, especially in autism families, especially in some survivors because what happened to them, marriage didn't work out. And because of the stress of the workplace at times. So I feel called to relationships. Like I would make excellent dating coach, marriage coach, romance coach. I would make excellent marriage and family therapist, a couples therapist. I've been told these things. I was never the type to talk a lot about relationships when I did. When I was asked questions from single people and married people, they would say, Antonio, you are called to heal broken romances in our world. So another call that I had to accept is running for public office. And that one was a struggle to accept because my past is not sugar and rainbows. And in the political arena, as it's commonly called in society, people will use ads, ADS, against you. No matter what happened in your past, it could be high school, it could be middle school, elementary school, it could be college. It could be your first job that you ever took out of college. It could be family members of yours, friends, or those who used to be your friends or the family you used to talk to but don't. No matter what happened in your past, political opponents, as they're commonly called, society will use anything that's perceived as bad from your past to make it look like you're a crook or you're cruddy. And I struggled with the running for public office part because I don't have a sexually acceptable past. I don't have a socially acceptable past. There are sketchy, shiesty, shady parts of my past. Childhood, early young man adulthood, family history. And so I wrestled with that for years because I felt like, well, because of my past, there's no way I could, you know, be an effective politician. And I remember talking to people about this, people that are wise people, and they said, Antonio, you have a past that's relatable to the world. That past is very useful and helpful to you, because voters will know that they're voting for a person that overcomes, that I don't have to be perfect to be a politician, and I don't have to have the ideal childhood to be of public service and civil service. And they told me, there's no dirt on you. You're not being something that you're not hiding anything. You are truly who and what you say that you are. You're the type of person that people would love to vote for. People don't want somebody squeaky clean, because nobody is. People don't want someone that acts all prim and proper all the time, because nobody is. Nobody wants to vote for somebody that's always of corporate professionalism every time they interact with people. They want somebody who's real, raw, and rugged in all the beautiful ways like you are. And so that helped me to overcome feeling ashamed of my past, feeling that guilt-ridden emotions of my past. So I decided to run for public office because autism families were the main ones saying I should do it. Hey, we need someone to help legislate victories for us. And autism families, the main one saying, Antonio, you should do couples counseling and you should help out with marriage coaching, dating coaching, and family therapy. They were the main ones saying these things. So at first, when it came to the public office one, that was the hardest thing to accept in terms of a call, because I don't always keep my language clean all the time. And yet, and the episodes, previous episodes display that. And I was afraid that that would be used against me because I have a colorful, profane, vulgar, expletive, explicit, uncut, uncensored side of myself, which is a side of ourselves that most people have. It's not to be socially offensive for the sake of being socially offensive. It's because I'm a passionate person. You can be passionate and not cuss. I recognize that. But because I'm passionate in the way that I tend to be taboo in a good way, that's why that side of me comes out. And you hear it often in the episodes I do. I remember telling people that, they said, you know, it's awesome to vote for somebody that actually talks like us, actually tells the truth. Some people said sometimes the truth is best said profane. Sometimes the truth is best said colorful. The truth is best said raw. Usually the truth is uncomfortable. Usually the truth is a gut puncher. but you're not hurting anybody to hurt anybody. You're not really hurting anybody at all, Antonio. It's okay. So I decided to run for public office when the time comes. Another thing I had to accept was feeling the call upon my life to bring humanitarian aid to the church world, the mosque world, the temple world, the synagogue world, the tabernacle world, the center world, the monastery world. I'm called to all these worlds. That means I have to help resolve and solve problems, issues, and conflicts that church people have, mosque people have, temple people have, synagogue people have, monastery people have, tabernacle people have, the center people have. In layman's terms, I'm called to the church world. I'm called to the mosque world. I'm called to the temple world. I'm called to the synagogue world. I'm called to the tabernacle world. I'm called to the center world. I'm called to the monastery world. So sometimes I have to be in religious text studies, like Bible studies, Torah studies, Quran studies, for example. Sometimes I do worship services. Sometimes I go to consecrations and convocations. And sometimes I go to their conventions and seminars, workshops, events that they have, etc. Sometimes. Because the world of religion does have a place in the humanitarianism universe. That is true. So I feel called to those worlds. So that's why I know that the worlds of law and theology is what I'm called to do. Which means that I have to constantly go back to school. I have to get multiple degrees, multiple diplomas, multiple licensures, multiple certifications, and I have to pass multiple exams in order to be properly accredited, because I can't just personally help people. I have to academically help people. So when it comes to my past, a lot of times I feel this call to commerce. Social entrepreneurship means, I said it before, but let me give you a new definition. Using business to solve the world's ills. Ills meaning issues, problems, conflicts, what have you. And I feel called to the psychology world. And a lot of times people treat me like a therapist, so I may have to actually become a licensed therapist, which is hard because I want to be friends with people that are cool, but when you're a therapist, you can't befriend every person that'll make a good friend to you. So that's difficult. That's rough for me. I accept the therapy call, but it's hard to accept. Very difficult. I've accepted that I cannot totally live alone. Because there are people that have had bad roommate experiences. I told you, you're the perfect roommate. And there's some people who, they don't want you to live totally alone, because when people enjoy you, they don't want you to leave their home. They want you to stay. They're like, we're having so much fun. Where are you going? All the fun you need is in this home. All the love that you need is in this home. And that's not, it's not a cult or anything. It's not being tyrannical. It's more, some people go, hey, everything you need, we have it for you. That's why you don't need to go anywhere. If you need food, we got all the food. You need drinks, we got all the drinks. You need entertainment, we got all the entertainment. You need intellectualism, we have a bookshelf. I mean, documentaries, whatever you want to do, you can do it here. You want to dance? We got the music. We got plenty of room to boogie. So I've had to accept that I have to live with people sometimes. And that was hard because when you come from an upbringing like mine, it could be a above average fixation on living alone, partly because of traumas. And I thought, well, I live alone because I'm always out and about doing good stuff. So I didn't, at the time, I didn't fully see myself as a family man yet. And I had to recognize that when you're traveling with people, sometimes people don't want you to be alone because they feel like, I'd rather you talk to me about how you feel than always talk out loud to yourself quietly about how you feel, because you can actually have a person verbally respond to you instead of you always having to verbally respond to yourself with yourself. I feel like for me, as I've matured, I had to change my heart in a lot of ways. Like, I may have, because sometimes people treat me like a lawyer. Antonio, I wish you could, man, your JD coming soon, man. Juris doctorate. Because the way you break down law, I hope you represent me soon. I've been told that by people. And some people say, I can't wait for you to have your THD. Because the way you break down theological truths is simplistic. You cut to the chase. And it's relatable. It's useful to me. I can apply it to my everyday life, every situation I'm in. I've had some people say, look, man, I'm going to start calling you Dr. Myers with your PhD coming soon because you going to be an ex. You make an excellent licensed clinical professional counselor. Your private practice is on the way sooner than you think, man. That's what I mean about having to go back to school. And when you're a person that is called to deal with and heal with traumatized individuals, that means that I'll have to start seeing a therapist soon. From time to time, I'll be seeing therapists. Because caregivers need caregiving. We need what we supply. So there are times where I have to help keep my mind regulated. And sometimes it's possible I may need to see a psychiatrist, even though I don't have any things that would make me have to see one. When you're dealing and healing with traumatized individuals, there's a strong possibility, not guaranteed, but there's a strong possibility that I may have to go see a psychiatrist, like taking medication, because it's not easy constantly helping people sort what is meant and felt when it comes to horror stories that actually happen to people, because there are horror stories in human form. Those who are predators and perpetrators, what have you. So there'll be times where I have to go see trained professionals. And I'm not ashamed of that. I'm like, look, I'm helping you heal. I also got to help myself heal. making referrals when I need to, because sometimes as human beings, we need a team of people to help regulate our minds. And we shouldn't totally help regulate people's minds on our own. Another thing is for me, growing up for myself, I mean, I have to change like my dental habits now, because I have to really be in shape physically and mentally. Dental is okay, but I have to have it top notch like that in my physical health, like getting active and moving. So I have to exercise 30 minutes a day, eat right every day, drink healthy fluids every day, and obey my dentist and doctors every day. I have to. So that's what I'm going to start doing. Because for me, I had to recognize that when you're dealing with traumatized individuals, well, it's healing with the traumatized individuals, sometimes you may have to physically run after them because they may want to try to attempt suicide, and I have to snatch it out of their hand. And I have to be quick. I have to be fast. I have to be in shape. I have to be physically strong, because sometimes I have to subdue them from wanting to do bad things to themselves. Not like attacking them, but who knows, they might try to, when my back is turned, sneak and take some pills to overdose, and I have to turn quickly and yank it out of their hand and hold them from touching it. I have to slap it out their hand. Sometimes, you know, suicide intervention, you have to do that kind of stuff that I'm called to do. It's drastic measures, but this is real. And sometimes I have to restrain people, because when they're angry, they want to lash out and go at people. And it's like, no, if you go at them, then you'll lose your court case and you'll get prosecuted. So sometimes I have to chill people out, calm people down, like, let's lash out legally. Let the legal system raise hell on them. Don't do it yourself. I get it. Yes, what they did to our family is wrong, but you have to not go to jail for the children in this family, for the adults in this family. So sometimes, like, I'm called to to those who've been addicted to substances, to anything harmful to their bodies. So recovery, rehabilitation is what I'm called to do. And my childhood will touch people in that way. And they'll be amazed I never took drugs because of the kind of childhood I had. And then, you know, this is all off the top of my head, by the way. This is my new way of doing podcasting, by the way. If you hear me use any dictionary words, it's because I have a Webster's on hand, but let me keep talking. So when it comes to what I've been assigned to do in life, to really be honest, it has been an adventurous journey. Because I have a father's heart. I have a husband's heart. I have a pastor's heart. I have a president's heart. And I have a caretaker's heart. So what I'm called to do in life is not for the faint at heart. It's not for weaklings. It's not for moral cowards. Most of the time, I'm uncomfortable because I'm growing. Most of the time, I have to keep my sanity intact as well as my safety intact too. So what I'm assigned to do in life, I have to be in shape all the time, emotionally, physically, every area of my life. Another thing is writing books. Publishing books. So I have to do book coaching for people. I have to do podcast coaching for people. I have to have a successful podcast. These are the things I'm called to do. Another thing I'm called to do is I'm called to do women's media, because I think there are plenty of women media platform hosts that are saying, can we have one good man as a part of our panel, as a part of our segments, because the ladies want to hear the good man's perspective, because it makes it easier for them to continue to feel good about men, or start feeling good about men if they haven't already. And plus, I've heard a lot of autism moms say, we need you on women's media. So that's what I'm called to do. I feel called to LGBTQ+ media, because autistic LGBTQ+ people say, hey, Antonio, you're one of us, so we gotta represent us well on our media platforms. I'm called to that too. Another thing is I feel called to assist in immigration reform. I've met a lot of immigrants who've told me that the type of person I am would make them want to come to America. And they said, Antonio, I feel like you're one of us, because you know what it's like to have to flee a place because of terrorism, and you make me feel good about being in this country. I'm not used to feeling good about being in this country, because people don't connect with the immigrant experience like you do. You totally understand. You get it. You know, we need comprehensive immigration reform, and who better than you, Antonio? You know? That's why we feel like you're not from America, because you don't act like a typical American. You know, a typical American that is uninformed, unenlightened, inarticulate, greedy, vultures, gluttonous, and a vanity. They said, Antonio, you're none of those things. That's why immigrants are telling me, that's why I just don't believe that you were born in America. I just don't believe that. You are well behaved, you're articulate, you keep yourself in shape, you are a pleasant person to be around, and you know how to empathize with all walks of life that have gone through hard times. They said, I feel like you're from Africa. You're from a Caribbean island. The way you look and how you talk and behave. So I'm called to the world of immigration. I'm called to do vocal coaching and voice acting because autism families the most have told me. You have the vocal prowess that the world is hungry for and thirsty for. What I've been assigned to do in this life H-E-A-R-T-O-N. So when it comes to media interviews, here's why I decided to do them. Because I remember autism spectrum families telling me that they need me to be on cable news because they don't get to experience any sensory friendly media moguls who can deliver the news in a way that's not of tabloid talk show verbal behavior. And not tabloid talk show nonverbal behavior as well. And when I talk to them about these things, I remember promising them that I would. As I get older, in flesh and of prudence, P-R-U-D-E-N-C-E. It makes me consider the fact that I remember promises, oaths, and vows that I've made to people. So I say what I say in the moments, but when I'm healing more and more each day and each night, that's why I'm constantly having a change of heart, because I'm no longer where I was, and I'm no longer where I am. So I decided to do cable news in terms of interviews, in terms of being a cable news show host, because there is a neurodiversity need. And a neurodivergence need pertaining to autism rights, disability rights, the deaf rights movement, the neurodistinct movement as well. So when I think about with media interviews too, I decided that I have to do Black-owned media too, because I remember many Black folks telling me that we need to have you within Black-owned media because we need your Black empowerment that is just a neurodiverse approach to Black empowerment. That's something that Black owned media doesn't have. This is what they told me. And I remember them telling me that they said we need to infuse autism rights, disability rights, they're distinct, and deaf rights into pro-Blackness. And they said, Antonio, we need you to do Black-owned media interviews and be a Black-owned media network host as well as a Black-owned media show host. It's similar to Autism Family saying we need you to be a cable news network host, HOST. And I think about how I promise those in the Black community that I'm a part of that I would definitely do Black-owned media shows, Black-owned media networks in terms of hosting as well as being interviewed. And I promise the Autism Family said yes, I would be on cable news networks to host as well as being interviewed also. So I am okay with the fact that it's not flip-flopping when you genuinely change your heart for the better. Where I was in consciousness is not where I'm in consciousness right now and forevermore. Flip-flopping is when you lie about views that you truly have for economic greed, for power lust. That's not what I'm doing. I have positive flashbacks the more I heal, the more I'm restored. I'm into fidelity. I'm into your word is bond. And I'm into commitment. I'm into loyalty as well. So I decided to understand that life is demanding me for more. Life is maturing me for more. Life is demanding me for more in terms of being a blessing more, being a miracle more, being signs and wonders more, and being a breakthrough more. life is maturing me more in terms of blessing people more and being doing more signs and doing more wonders and doing more breakthroughs all for people and being more miraculous to people. So, I've had a change of heart on those things. Now, this is also my mentality on another change of heart I had. I remember talking to autism families. And they would talk to me about the importance of me having a YouTube channel. They said, Antonio, we need to have neurodiversity on YouTube. And Antonio, you must have a YouTube channel. This is a requirement that we have for you because your optimism, your overcoming of adversity, your articulation, your geniusness, your being wise beyond your years, and your therapeutic presence needs to be for the world of YouTube. You must do this for us. I said I promised them that I will. So I decided that I'm gonna have a YouTube channel. Another change of heart I had was social media. Ooh. This one I struggle with the most, believe it or not. Because I've been on all social media for years. I would have all the social media accounts, permanently delete them all, get back on and off, because I struggled with the bigoted content that social media has. And that how hate crimes, for some hate crimes, can be attributed to social media. And I recognize, I remember autism families telling me that I need to be on social media because neurodiversity needs to go global. And they said to me that, Antonio, because you have a star power as well as a stage presence, that both are compassionately beneficial to us autism families. We need your help in overcoming stigmas regarding autism. And I remember them telling me that we will gladly help you to have the proper boundaries regarding the trolls, the hecklers, naysayers, haters, and detractors. They won't ever get a hold of you in any kind of way, not even the scammers or spammers. And they said, Antonio, you have to do this for us too. We have a healthy dependency upon you and on you. And they said, we can't and won't do these things without you. You're the perfect fit for these calls upon your life. So I decided to go back on social media. These were conversations I've had with autism families my whole life, and fairly recently, as I mature, I can honestly say overcame a lot of all of actually the overstimulation of big of the content I decided. When I go back to social media, just like YouTube, I don't go to certain YouTube channels because that's where you get the bigotry. And I don't go to, I don't watch reels or stories or posts of certain people because of their bigoted content too. So it is possible to use video sharing media, virtual media, social media, and not look at certain people's accounts. Because once you choose to, and you see what you see, you can't unsee it. When you hear what you hear that you shouldn't be hearing, you can't unhear it either. So I decided to not do a YouTube channel by myself. I decided not to do social media by myself. I think that was the issue, is that I didn't have, at the time, the proper support where I could be on social media just fine and be on YouTube just fine. So I decided to go do those things. What else do I have a change of heart on? This is me interviewing myself. Okay, yes, I do have this other change of heart. When I wanted to hello everyone, so I want to talk about the boundaries of my being a public servant, not just a private servant. So I'm not trying to be all things to all people. It's not something I care about. It's not something I want. It's not something I need. That's not something I aspire to be. Anyway, anyhow. For myself, what I choose to do is to recognize that I only help people that are not permanently set in their self-destructive behavioral ways. I only help people that truly desire wholesome change making, as well as those who need wholesome change making, and they see that need as a need. I don't help everyone, and I'm grateful for that. I can't help everybody, and I'm grateful for that as well. I don't try to help everybody like I used to, because that was a trauma doctrine from 5 years of age, reference to me. What I do now and forevermore is I don't do too much, I don't do too little when it comes to anything and everything. I don't live my life in extremes. I don't live my life in black and white thinking. What I do is make referrals when I'm not able to provide certain kinds of help that people need. And when I can help directly, I do so, knowing that I have the skill sets, the training to go help. I don't try to help vultures, vermin. Snakes, wolves, and sly foxes. In human forms. Because they never want to grow for the better. They don't even want to alter themselves for the better. So I'm not into Captain Save Everybody, like I was made to feel like I had no choice but to feel when I was 5 years old. What I can tell you is this, that when I help people who there is no expectation of reward materially or spiritually. When I help others, I help because of the rightness of right, the what's right and right is why I do the right thing. I'll also say this. Metaphorically, I let some people drown. When empathy becomes apathy, I depart with my heart. I choose to keep my heart softened instead of hardened. Some people would say I'm of healthy narcissism and healthy selfishness. And I take those things as compliments because that's their way of saying that I'm about self-care because I'm a self-caregiver. That's why I can be a caregiver to those that don't abuse my caregiving, because the ones that try to abuse my caregiving, I don't give them any care. The other boundaries I have are that I don't allow spiritual bleeding nor trauma dumping. That was the world I grew up in against my will at 5 years old. And it was a habit that carried on until that stopped recently once I figured out what was going on. So imagine 25 years, nearly 26 years of that. I grew up in a culture where everybody was trauma dumping and spiritual bleeding. So I evade those kinds of people, because that's how you evade those kinds of warped versions of venting, so to speak. The boundaries for me is that I've even gotten to the point where I can recognize how I have vibes about certain people off the bat right away, and I go, I know not to talk to that person, or I can talk to that person. I know not to help that person, or I can't go help that person. Or I have to be more stern with this person other than somebody else, because they're more in charge personalities. Sometimes you have to settle those personalities back on down, gently but firmly. And then there's other people I go, not sure if I want to have anything to do with you, because you'll try to abuse my forgiveness, abuse my mercy, abuse my grace, abuse my redemption offers. And they claim to be of repentance, but they abuse repentance by simply not repenting. You know, again, they act as if they're always over the top repentant. That's actually penitence. So I don't let everyone confide in me about any and everything they want to. I don't let everybody vent to me. I let the right people vent to me. I let the right people confide in me, because I know that I will not be scarred for life, internally, externally, in those ways. I tell people no sometimes without explaining myself. If I'm uncomfortable with physical contact, I gently but firmly directly communicate that. I believe in following up with consequences when people refuse to heed your reasonable accommodations. One-sided relationship is not a relationship at all. All relationships should deserve mutuality and reciprocity. I'm not a chameleon. I'm not a pushover. I'm not a doormat. Never happened, never will be. And I say no without feeling guilty. I rest without feeling guilty. I honor my body, the temple, every day by taking excellent care of it in every way I should, according to the health experts, without feeling guilty. I displease some people for all the right reasons without feeling guilty. I disappoint some people for all the right reasons without feeling guilty. I don't feel guilty that not everybody likes me, not everybody loves me, not everybody respects me. So I don't do burnout. I do rest, I do boundaries, I do margin by not accepting every invitation and taking time out for myself, my me time. I embrace not being omnipresent. I embrace not being omnibenevolent. I embrace not being omniscient. I embrace not being omnipotent either. I'm not God. I don't even try to be God. I don't have the God complex or the Messiah complex. I don't even have the Savior complex. So what that simply means is that I choose not to live a life of blurred lines, no compound interest, meaning no conflicts of interest, no competing interests is what I meant to say. And I do all these things. I make time for all my favorite hobbies within my leisure time. I don't always do what people want me to do. I always do the right thing even when I don't fully feel like doing the right things in the moment. And I demand honor in all of my relationships, all my dynamics. No ands, ifs, or buts about honor. And I'm quick to completely cut off vipers in human form, as well as the vipers' contact information blockage, I should say. It reminds me of my grandma when she talked about my having godly wife, godly children. I told y'all about. I appreciate my grandma believing in me in those those ways, because that was a way of saying that when it comes to women, that I am the dog's bark, also known as the cat's meow. And I love that she told me that also, because she was affirming, even back then, my effective church leadership ability that is free of scandal and free of double living. There's no need to worry about me. I apply inner beauty to myself and to others. I'm thankful I got my health consciousness from my grandma Claire, so. In closing, I say that I'm just so thankful for the seeds that my grandma Claire planted in me, starting when I was under the age of 6. And the women took me to tattoo parlors. They were revealing clothing. Some of the clothing was tattered, that had words on there, Gluteus Maximus, racy words on Gluteus Maximus. So that was more of me trying to not put any stress on my flesh in terms of hating the urges of my said flesh. Because in trauma, I was taught to feel those ways that I normally don't feel. You know, the flesh hatred. They tried to teach me spirit hatred. I was trying to love my spirit and flesh independent of the types of traumas. I'm just so, I went quiet because I have no more traumatic stories of my early man, young adulthood. Nor my childhood to tell. After I share this one more story, that'll be true. Some of the women I slept with were beauty pageant contestants, supermodels, models, pop bottles with them. Full throttle. So there was a mixture of the concept of superstardom with eroticism out of agony, angst, and anguish. I am also called to be a teacher, professor, lecturer, and visiting, traveling, special assistance when it comes to educational facilities.